Hello and welcome to Day One Patch Podcast, episode 470. I'm your host, Ryan Johnson. It's a snowy day here. A lot of snow coming down. But I got Matt with me here.
He's keeping you warm.
Yeah.
Here virtually.
We're hiding in the COVID bunker still.
Yeah. That's pretty crazy, actually.
I think that's what you said in the first episode in which we did during COVID, actually.
That we were in the COVID bunker?
I think so.
Hunkering down together.
Tim Spence is also here.
Weather in the storm.
Is it snowing out by you?
It's bad out here, too.
Yeah.
Actually, it's almost stopped here now.
The weather did say it was going to stop snowing around 10-ish.
And hey, start that's raining. Almost now.
But I really want pizza, Matt, so I might risk it. We'll see how it is by the time we finish here.
My mom had to go pick up her sister and her husband from the airport. And so she had to drive out on like the highway to get there. And the highway had not been plowed yet. So she pretty well drove at like the worst time. Because it was before it had been plowed, but right after the really heavy snow had started.
Yeah.
Actually, I haven't seen a plow like this year yet.
Well, it's kind of ridiculous.
Well, yeah, usually they're out there salting, though, when it gets colder.
They did the first snowfall we had. At least they did here. I don't know about your place, but
I never saw it. I never saw any salt either, but I'm not exactly out there watching the roads, but usually by now I would see a plow or two.
Matt is a member of the Snowplow Watchers group.
Man, I hope I get paid because that's lame as hell. God damn.
All right. How you guys doing? You doing all right?
Doing A-OK.
I'm doing all right, yeah.
We're going to start the show off with video game fun facts. We're on number 23 of 25, brought to us by Game Informer.
Where are we getting there?
Number 23, the smells of soccer and racing. The UK versions of FIFA 2001 and Gran Turismo 2 shipped with the peculiar idea of scratch and sniff discs. If you scratched FIFA's disc, you would smell the pitch. Rubbing Gran Turismo's 2 disc would deliver an authentic pit stop smell.
Pit stop?
Yeah,
oh, like that.
Like the sweat of the pit crew?
Or maybe oil. Oil and grease and metal and blood.
Oh God.
I wonder if those are the only two that ever did it.
And scratch and sniff a disc.
Yeah.
I haven't heard of that for like any other.
Well, do you remember the Switch product? When it came out, people thought that the cartridges had some sort of nasty taste to them to prevent like, you know, kids and babies from eating them.
They do. Yeah, they have a bittering agent.
I thought that wasn't true. Didn't Nintendo say that wasn't true?
No, it's absolutely true.
It's absolutely
specifically
true?
For that. Yeah. To stop kids from wanting to eat them because they're small cartridges.
We got a fact check this right now.
I tasted it myself. It has a bittering agent on it. I licked my Breath of the Wild cartridge.
You did it for science, though, right?
Next question.
Yeah. We're going to say that. For science.
Can confirm it was bitter.
Like bitter enough to, you know, you could have like a visceral reaction and like really not want to eat it? Or is it just a little bitter?
It was a surprising amount of bitterness, I have to say.
Okay.
I thought it would just be like, okay, yeah, that's like, there's something on there. But it was like, oh, no, that is a lot more than I was expecting.
So a kid would probably be even more affected. Be like, ah!
Yeah, little kid would probably spit it out and be like, eh!
Man, only Nintendo would think of the kids, eh?
I mean, it's their prime demographic.
Yeah.
Although,
yeah, so in a statement,
does PlayStation have anything small enough for a kid to digest? Like, digest the whole DualSense?
Yeah, UMD, actually.
UMD, yeah.
Oh, God.
But yes, Nintendo provided a statement to IGN. To avoid the possibility of accidental ingestion, keep the game card away from young children. A bittering agent has also been applied to the game card. This bittering agent is non-toxic.
Told you.
This also brings to mind, though, I remember I think Jessica Chobot got famous by, not that she got famous, but she had a viral moment of her licking a PSP, I believe it was.
Anyway.
Do you think they should bring back scratch and sniff discs?
I do. They should bring back discs and then bring back Scratch and Sniff.
They got to bring back discs first. Get the discs popular again.
I still have discs.
I know, and you're crazy for
it. I can't remember the last time I bought a disc.
It's whatever's cheaper, man. I check the sales, and if it's cheaper at EB Games, then I'll buy the disc.
That's true, yeah. The last one I bought was the Star Wars Jedi Survivor.
There you go.
On disc, because it was half price.
I'm saying you're crazy for buying discs, Matt, but I have recently gotten to 4K movie discs. I've been buying those.
Which is arguably crazier, because I would say, at least in my circle, a lot more people have completely ditched physical movies.
Yeah. All right. We're going to hop into the news for the week. CES was just last week, and that's where they usually announce a lot of cool new consumer gadgets. But NVIDIA also announced a new RTX 40 Super graphics cards. It will discontinue the non-super variants. This is from IGN. As part of its CES 2024 announcements, the company announced the first three RTX 40 Super Series GPUs, the RTX 4080 Super, the RTX 4070 Ti Super, and the RTX 4070 Super. This marks the return of the Super line that they introduced in 2019. Like other GPUs in the RTX 40 series, the Super variant graphics cards will use the Ada Lovelace architecture, allowing these GPUs to support DLSS 3 and DLSS 3.5, in addition to the first and second generation of NVIDIA's Super sampling technologies. NVIDIA touts that the 4080 Super as being a faster GPU than its predecessor, delivering twice the performance of the RTX 3080 Ti graphics card, and is an ideal GPU for those looking for 4K gaming. The RTX 4070 Ti Super is for those who seek a high-end 1440p experience with 2.5 times the performance of the RTX 3070 Ti. In contrast, the RTX 4070 Super is a more mid-range 1440p with better bang for the buck. Matt, you just bought a graphics card. How do you feel about this announcement?
So is the 4080 Super the next step up from mine?
Yeah.
That's fine.
Just cool with that?
I mean, it's going to happen. It's always going to be more parts coming out.
It's an inevitability. And if I was into PC building as a hobby, then maybe it would affect me more. But like, I mean, as it sits right now, my fans are set to 25% speed. I played Avatar at 1440p and it didn't spin up at all. So, and I monitored all attempts. So I think I'm good. I'm definitely good. I don't need, this is like that argument where, like, you can argue about an M.2 drive being faster than a 2.5-inch SSD, but the start menu and the menu options only open instantly, like, so instant. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I'm not going to be ready and be like, okay, I'm going to press the start menu, really quickly press Steam, and start Steam. It's ridiculous. Like, instant's instant. That's it. If it's fast and it's good, then it's fast and it's good.
Also, you bought a 4080, which is pretty damn good. They're saying that this new 4080 Super is great for 4K gaming, but you just bought a 1440p monitor and probably aren't going to be doing 4K for God knows how long. So you're definitely fine. You know,
I mean, possibly ever either. Like, I do like this 1440p monitor, but I am not very picky. I do appreciate the extra real estate. So I don't know if I would go back to 1080 necessarily, but, maybe I would keep 1080 for my secondary monitor, but for my main monitor, I think 1440 is going to be the way forward, but I'm not picky with my monitor. So, I mean, Avatar looks really good on this monitor. Like, don't get me wrong. And other games look really good. And I'm like, whoa, that looks really nice. But at the same time, if you were like, oh, for some reason, like, we have to go back to 1080, I'd be like, oh, dang. But that would be it. That would be my whole response. I'm just not picky with screens.
1080 sucks, though.
It really doesn't, though. I'm so close to
1080.
I'm so close to the screen. Like,
I have a 1080p monitor at work, and it's just horrible.
I have no desire to upgrade from 1080.
I had totally a 900p monitor, Ryan.
Wait, what's the resolution of your TV, Tim? Like your living room, like TV, 4K? Okay.
But like Matt says, for PC gaming, like he says, I'm a foot and a half from my computer monitor right now. It doesn't need to be 4K.
You can see the pixels.
I can't.
Well, yes, you can. I know you can.
The beautiful thing about getting older is that my eyes are getting blurry. And so even if I had a 4K monitor, it would still look like 1080p anyway. So I may as well save the money.
Okay.
Did you upgrade this thing or did you just swap it out? Like, what the hell?
But like literally though, I've looked at 4K monitors and I've been like, these icons are too small.
Oh, like, I would literally
have to get a, I would have to get a bigger, physically larger screen if I was going to have 4K. And at that point, what's the point? Because these 24 inch monitors that I'm a foot and a half away from are already too much.
That is a fair argument when you're talking about actual screen size. Does a 27 inch need to be 4K? Not necessarily. You know, it's too small of a size to need that pixel density. However, it looks damn nice. I think it looks nice.
For sure, that stuff looks nice. Like even your TV, Ryan, looks way better than my TV. But it's like a lot better, but not compared to garbage. There's a big difference, right? It's like the difference between going from a tube TV back in the day to a flat screen TV. It's like that's a big jump. But going from like 720 to 1080 is not that big of a jump. 1080 to 1440p and so on to 4 and then 8K. They're not that big of a jump. There is a difference, like no doubt. This monitor's better. Your TV is better than mine, like no doubt. But like for me, as long as it looks good and I can read everything, I will say this though: I'm using the accessibility settings like crazy and turning the damn text up because I can't read shit in games. That's probably because it's not 4K. I will also say that on this monitor, I cranked that friggin' scaling because I couldn't see those icons. Like Tim said, I looked at it and was like, "Is that how small my taskbar is?" I'm like, "Nope." And Windows was like, "We recommend 100% scaling." I'm like, "Yeah, well, you're doing 150 because that's what's gonna happen here."
I will say though, Matt, your TV still impresses me.
It was a real good TV, man.
It still looks pretty good for how old. It's impressive.
We still use the TV upstairs that I bought in like 2014.
Hell yeah.
First LG smart TV that they made, or at least in the early days of smart TVs, with its Wiimote remote.
Yeah.
Still use it.
I will say, though, the problem with going OLED is it's very hard to go back. Like, my PC monitors are pretty good, but they're not OLEDs. And, like, I'm starting to kind of feel it.
I don't know, man. Like, I like OLED on my phone for sure. And I did notice, for example, one of the things with phones was it went from an average of 60 hertz on many phone models to 90 hertz, I think it was, or higher even. I think mine's maybe 90 now, and it was 60. And, like, for sure, I'm like, oh, this is a lot smoother. Okay. And then I just kind of got used to it, and that was it. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether that's, like, I don't know, like, yeah, it's nice to have, but if you were like, you got to go back down to the Note 10 Plus, it'd be like, well, as long as battery's fine, like, I guess, and it wouldn't be the end of the world.
Yeah, I have this horrible thing where I can't stand things not being as good as they can be. So if there's a better option out there, it's like I feel like I need it. And maybe that's, you know, capitalism being burned into my skull, but
so then why are you using Apple products?
Because they make some of the best phones?
Oof.
That's the joke, is that they didn't.
Anyway, Tim, you just got a 3080 yourself. If you're doing 1080, though, you're probably
3080 Ti.
You're probably fine for a long time. You know.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, 1440 at some point, if I ever do opt to get like better monitors. But like I say, right, like I'm not super fussed about really high fidelity graphics. Like, unless it reaches a point where like the games are being designed with it. I mean, they probably already are being designed with it in mind, and it reaches a point where there is a very noticeable difference between 1080p to like 1440.
Yeah.
Then maybe, yeah. But like Matt says, right? Like I will be in those accessibility options and I will be cranking the scaling up to 125.
The nice thing about these cards though is they lowered the price. I think they were feeling a bit of a pinch from, you know, people not being able to afford their ridiculous prices that they had before. Oh, but also competition from AMD. There was a lot of AMD graphics cards that are, you know, on par or close to NVIDIA's cards, but for like a little bit less. And so maybe they're trying to make that these prices seem more palatable to more people. So the 4070 Super will be launching January 17th at $600 American. That's pretty good for a decent card. What is a decent card? So, and then if you're looking at the high end here, the 4080 Super will be $1,000 American, which also that's a lot of money. It's better than what the current state of graphics cards is.
Yeah, that's surprising how low it is.
Yeah, so that's a nice little thing.
I wonder if they're taking a hit on those.
Well, maybe, because AMD said that they're not a graphics card company anymore. They're an AI company. So maybe now they're, I don't know if that means they're getting out of.
Pretty cringy.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Sounds like the marketing like BS, right? I don't know if that means they're getting out of graphics cards. I kind of doubt it, but it might not be their focus because AI is really taking off for them.
I mean, if they leave the market, what do we have to compete against NVIDIA? Intel?
Maybe, yeah. Intel's time to shine.
But would they catch up? They probably wouldn't.
I think they would.
You think they'd catch up?
Their first set of cards, they didn't review well at launch, but they did some updates to the firmware and whatnot, and they're apparently pretty good nowadays. So if people are buying it at all, then things could turn around. It just depends on how much money they want to sink into it before they start making money, right?
I wonder how much the brand matters to gamers. Like, I know NVIDIA is a big thing and AMD is a big thing. I wonder if the brand would play anything where it's kind of like, I'm not going to get an Intel GPU. Like, even to me, that just sort of, that's kind of an eyebrow raiser. It doesn't sound right just because it's never been right yet.
Yeah, and their like integrated graphics cards have always been garbage.
Yeah. The classic stupid, I forget even remember the software, but the like little embedded driver that would rarely like install itself when you install Windows and you'd be constantly messing with it.
Yeah. So I have a 2080. I don't think I'm going to upgrade though. I talked to you, Matt, about this and it's like, might as well just wait for the next, you know, series of this might be like a half step because it's not a whole new number generation. So.
I'm an advocate for you waiting, or like not necessarily you, but like anyone, just to wait until you have problems. Like why not? Because budget speaking, I mean, if you were to buy like a brand new computer right now, like let's say you bought not a new computer, like you bought like a new monitor right now, and like you're like, you know what, I'm gonna keep this monitor for 10 years, but then you know, 2 years down the line, it's out of warranty and it breaks. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, I have to replace this monitor. That really sucks if you live on a budget, like most everyone does, but if you live on any sort of budget, but it doubly sucks if you're a person that upgrades just to keep up when you're not actually upgrading when there's a problem. Like if you only upgrade when you have a problem, then you're not necessarily upgrading some stuff and you'll realize like, oh shoot, like this, like my old mouse rusted out. Like it literally rusted out.
Yeah.
It was all rusty on the top.
That's
and
so gross. Why did it have that much moisture on it?
I don't know. Like the top, it happened to, I think it was a defect with that mouse because it was a CM Storm Sentinel 2 and a friend in college bought it as well. And his rusted out on like the top plate rusted out in like 3 months. And so he gave it to me for parts, but then I didn't need any parts and I used mine until it was well over 10 years old. So then when I needed a mouse, it's like, well, I can buy a nice mouse now, you know? And so like, I'm not like $500 into mice at that point. Because I've replaced my mouse 7 times just to keep up with the latest. Mm-hmm. And so if something breaks, it's like it sucks, but it's like, okay, like then you can just replace it.
Other CES hardware that got announced, Samsung TVs are getting its own video game controller. This is from Digital Trends. Samsung Gaming Hub is a feature on newer Samsung TVs that gathers cloud gaming apps like Amazon Luna and Xbox Game Pass all in one place. Ahead of CES 2024, Samsung revealed that it's going to take a step further and starting up a Design for Samsung Gaming Hub program that relates to gaming accessories directly made for the device for the service. The first product that will bear this name is a new controller from PDP called the Replay Wireless Controller. This midnight blue device looks similar to an Xbox controller, but features a home button that can immediately launch Samsung Gaming Hub, as well as volume and power buttons for the TV. The PDP Replay controller will have a rechargeable battery that can last for 40 hours. It's also designed to have minimal latency for cloud gaming and has a 30-foot Bluetooth connection range. I find this interesting. I don't have a Samsung TV, and I'm not sure how many people like use this gaming hub. So I'm curious, you know, where's the audience for this controller?
It's got to be the casual gamers, I think. I'd imagine.
Yeah, I wonder if it's like, clearly we're going to reach a point where there won't be boxes anymore, right? Like everything will be streamed. So
you still think that's going to happen at some point?
I think that's going to happen. I think it makes the most sense for game companies to just become software companies instead of spending the money in R&D and hardware. having to maintain it, having to do customer service to like answer people's questions about what's wrong with their products and stuff like that. Like, it only makes sense if you don't have to have a physical product to not have it. And I think this is just them sort of being like, here's the proof of concept that like, if you don't want to have a box, like, I'm pretty sure if we asked Adriano if he could get rid of every game console he had, but still be able to play all of his game library, he would say in a heartbeat, like, just for the sake of simplicity, right?
Mm-hmm. I guess it's hard to get out of our mentality where, you know, we're gaming on these boxes and whatnot, but to like, I would never make the switch to this Samsung TV and a controller and streaming. You know, it just seems, it seems strange to me.
I mean, I wouldn't say never. I think it will come up if it becomes a convenience thing for you, because that's probably what it would be for me. Like, I thought, like, I bought the physical, like, the disc PS5, because I was like, I still want to be able to play my PS4 games on it and stuff. And I have used that functionality of it about twice.
The PS4, like, backwards compatibility stuff?
Yeah, like the fact that I can play my PS4 discs on my PS5. I think I played, like, that was when I was playing Bloodborne when the PS5 came out. So I think I played a bit of Bloodborne on it, and I played Red Dead 2. I tried playing Red Dead 2 on the PS5, and that was it. It was just two games that I tried to play it. So I was just sitting there for a while thinking, like, man, I thought that I would be like, I'm never going to give up my physical games. And now I'm like, I mean, it is pretty convenient to just be able to sit down, grab a controller, and just pull up whatever game's installed on your console, or just use like a streaming service.
I feel like the video game industry has become so big that a lot of these companies are looking for ways in, right? Now, Samsung obviously sells monitors and TVs, but they're looking for even more ways, you know, to make some sort of money. I think even LG has like some apps or something, or some games on the TV you can play somehow. Mm-hmm. I'm not really sure how that works.
Maybe, well, Netflix, like, or something.
It's similar with like Netflix. And like, so I recently started watching One Piece from the beginning again, and I've been watching on the Crunchyroll app, and I've seen now that Crunchyroll has games. If you're like a premium subscriber, you can play games in the Crunchyroll app now. I don't really know how you do it, but I assume with some sort of remote or controller, or maybe even just your phone. I don't know.
They announced that there's going to be more, I guess, devices. They want to put this badge on there called Designed for Samsung Gaming Hub. And then when you see that, you'll know it's for your Samsung gaming TV. But they haven't really said what other products that will be. I'm going to guess headset, maybe.
I'm thinking an HDMI stick as well for other TVs.
A Samsung gaming hub stick.
Yeah, for other TVs. And then it would be like, this is also available on Samsung TVs. Ditch the stick and buy a Samsung TV.
Ditch the thing that we sold you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that we told you was like perfect for this, so, like a perfect solution for your gaming desires or whatever.
Well, because I'm thinking that like there's going to be a lot of people that hold on to their TVs forever, whereas this is one of the few services that actually offers a bunch of these services altogether. And so, like, they do have a bit of a market there where if someone just buys the stick rather than buying a whole new TV, but then they just constantly advertise, like, the Samsung TVs. And then the next time you go to upgrade TV, you just think, oh, if I just buy a Samsung TV, I don't need to have the stick anymore. And it'll just work right on the TV. And then they slowly but surely sort of, like, weasel their way in a bit.
It is interesting. I wonder how, you know, because it took a long people to get 1080p TVs, and now it took a long time for people to get even on to 4K. But like, how many people still have even older TVs? Like, you're like, Matt, yours is pretty old.
It's 11 or 12 years old, yeah.
And I'm sure a lot of people are like, why upgrade unless it's broken? So I'm just curious what the numbers are, what the percentages are on the TVs people own.
A lot of people just watch TV at night still. It's still a thing that people just sort of turn on when they get home. And I mean, I've definitely seen people with just like half broken TVs that they just keep watching, where they're like, the backlight's all burned in and some of the pixels don't work and stuff, and they just keep running it. So if people are willing to do that, I mean, I'm sure that there's going to be you know, 720, like original, like Gen 1 or 2 720p TVs still floating around out there.
TVs maybe even do plasmas. Last quite a while, actually, eh?
Yeah, because I guess it's, they're like, they're functionally pretty simple, I guess. And you're not really touching them all the time. You're not really like bumping into them and moving them around and all that kind of thing.
Remember we were at that rental home and there was a Sting live concert burned into the TV?
Yeah, Marty was holding the DVD and he's like, this is a ridiculous DVD cover. And when we looked at the TV, that exact DVD cover was burned into the TV.
And imagine the Samsung Gaming Hub is only on like their newer TVs. So it's probably not even on a majority of the TVs they have out in the wild.
That's right. Like the Samsung, like if I was into streaming, you know, I would consider, you know, a stick or something, or even like a controller that somehow could play the games too, and then would stream it to the TV or something crazy like that. You know, something that would get me into that sort of Samsung gaming ecosystem. Yeah, I'd be down for that for sure. I do have a question though for you guys. So like, this is something that is pretty simplistic and convenient where, you know, instead of us, like in my case, I have to like turn on my surround sound, turn on my TV, and then turn on my console. Now, obviously I could cut out the surround sound, just have the TV and the console. And so this kind of cuts out another step. You're just kind of turning on the TV and going to the, you know, the game mode, if you will. So the question is though, is like years back, like probably like 2011, 2012, 2013, it was advertised like a lot, and I don't even know if it really even is anymore. I don't really think it is, that our phones were going to become everything, where we were going to plug in or have wireless connections to our phones no matter what, where we'd come in and we'd just be like, you know, phone TV mode, and it would play the game, phone computer mode, and it would do that, or you'd plug it into like a dock, like Samsung Dex, and it would become everything. And so I wonder, because we haven't done that, for no good reason either. Like, I know that the software is not quite there, but I think we have like the hardware capability to do it. It's just, we haven't done it yet type thing. I'm just wondering whether like people like having separate boxes for everything and whether that would keep some semblance of sort of like the set-top box console alive.
Well, the phone really has become a lot of people's main computer, not in terms of like doing like serious work, but just in terms of organizing their life and having all of their, you know, like your photos and your music, and you watch like videos on it on YouTube and stuff. It's become a central part of your life now, but it just hasn't become that everything that you just plug it into a monitor and becomes your computer and stuff. That hasn't taken off.
Well, I'm still like, I know we had this conversation before, but I'm still an advocate for the phone serves itself best when it's in its own form factor, and that it is annoying to use even when it's mounted to a controller. I still find it to be, you know, just a little more inconvenient, to the point where I'm like, no, the hell with this, I'm just going to get a console going. And I know that that's a like a large price jump and a lot of people would not do that, but I'm convinced that a lot of people would do that too.
Yeah,
because it is well, like you use a backbone now, Ryan.
Yeah.
Is your phone more inconvenient to use as a phone, meaning messaging and email and whatever, when it's in the backbone?
Oh, undoubtedly, yeah.
And but is it a pain in the ass enough for you to be like, ah, and like kind of like take the backbone off sometimes and just go to the console? Well,
you're not so...
Like if you were in a back and forth conversation where you're actively trying to solve a problem with a friend or something, and so you're, you know, you're actively texting each other, you're in an active like IM conversation, would you carry on that active IM conversation with the backbone on? Would you be like, oh, you know, I'm still going to chat, but I'll like connect my backbone and start playing and I'll keep IMing because it's on the same device? To me, it's too inconvenient to do that.
Yes.
It's also a reason why people still pull their phone out when they have a smartwatch.
Yeah, but I don't think it's that big of an issue. I think you seem to be making it as like a, what do you call it? A deal breaker.
No, I don't think it's a deal breaker. Like, I don't think it's a deal breaker. Just personally, I find it very annoying. And so, like, it's maybe more of a pet peeve for me or what have you. But I think that that sort of like pet peeve, if it's like a, if it's a big enough market of pet peeve, I guess it, like that would keep set-top boxes alive to an extent where we're not going to see an amalgamation of all our devices. Like not all our consoles are going to just zoom into our TV, for example, because why are there still 4K Blu-rays, you know, kicking around of all the things? I'm not saying there's not going to be an evolution. Like maybe an Xbox will become a, you know, an HDMI stick or something like that. But I'm just curious, like whether streaming is the future when we still don't have the flawless future of our phones, which are very powerful now, computationally speaking, our phones being everything, because it really, it is wasted potential. Like instead of me booting up a laptop, like having just a screen and a keyboard that wirelessly connects somehow, or even wired connects to my laptop or connects to my phone, excuse me. And in using my phone, I mean, in terms of the available computing power, that makes sense to do that. But instead, it's just sitting in my pocket while I'm on a laptop. You know what I mean? Like, it's a lot of wasted power. The capability of this phone and many other phones are is much more. They can play full 3D games and, you know, the list goes on.
I think this is why I like the idea of the ecosystem, where I like living in the Apple ecosystem, because it's like, oh, if I'm playing, you know, Resident Evil on my Mac, I can pick it up on my phone and just keep playing that same save or whatever the case may be. Or then hopefully the next Apple TV is powerful enough to run, you know, the mobile version of Resident Evil, and then I could play it there if I wanted. I like having my content everywhere I go and not having to worry about, oh, is it on this system or not, you know? That might be the more like better future than actually having one device do everything. Just having all your stuff available everywhere.
But with that being said, though, so for example, like with your laptop, you will say mirror your like your messages app. Let's just say like text messages. You'll mirror your text messages. Well, there'll be a text message app on your computer that's able to, whether it's ecosystem or not, but it's, you know, basically the same argument.
Yeah.
So that you're able to use that. What I'm saying is that, like, if we want to, like, amalgamate everything to the TV, like with the Samsung Gaming Hub, so it's taking away the game console effectively, that is convenient, like, no doubt. And, like, this controller is pretty cool. If I had, like, another room, I would probably consider this, because it'd be annoying to be like, oh, shoot, I want to play Xbox over there. I have to, like, bring my Xbox over. I acknowledge that's annoying. So, I wouldn't mind getting another Samsung TV for another room, having the gaming hub, then I don't have to have the console moved around.
Right.
But I don't mirror my messages to my TV. Why is that? Like, I feel like there's like this like human desire, or I don't know, something that's keeping us multi-device, even when it doesn't make sense. Obviously, having, you know, I'm not going to take my TV in my pocket and go to the store, but like, I need my phone for that. But like, even when the form factor doesn't matter, it's like, we still prefer to have multiple devices. At least I do. And I mean, clearly a lot of people do, like with the Apple ecosystem, it seems to adhere to that, where it's like watch, phone, tablet, computer. Mm-hmm. And then even sometimes laptop and then desktop. I just find it interesting that like in gaming, we're sort of like combining, but I'm just wondering how much we're going to actually truly combine at the end of the day.
Yeah. I feel like people don't all want to be as like efficient as possible. Like people don't necessarily want like one device for everything. Like people want things for different tasks, you know, like you say, you're not going to bring your TV with you in your pocket when you go somewhere. Like people want a device to go with them when they go somewhere as a casual device. They want something to go with them as a workout device. They want something to go with them as a heavy workload device. Like people just want different things for different scenarios. Sometimes people want different stuff just for the sake of having stuff. Like not everybody wants to be as efficient as possible, right?
It might help with your sanity just to like compartmentalize things. You know, each task has its own specific device or whatever. And it just helps keep you kind of situated.
Embrace the chaos for the sake of simplicity.
Right, yeah. But anyway.
That I was about to say, just kind of as a joke, but kind of sounds like my parents' TV situation where they have like five remotes because they don't want to learn the buttons on one universal remote. They want a separate remote for each function.
Well, because they know how each remote individually works, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Easier to just remember all four than just to use one and learn how to use it.
Yeah. Cause like home means something different on this device versus this device versus this device.
And that's fair. I don't think that's not, you know, understandable.
All right, let's move on to another story here. HBO had a very successful The Last of Us season one, won a bunch of awards at the Emmys. Did it win at the...
No. Huh?
I was wondering if it won some Globes too, but I think Globes is the only movies.
Oh, okay.
It sounded like you cut out, like it, or maybe your brain cut out or something. It was like, hey, bah!
So anyway, season two is now announcing some of the casting that the decisions they've made. And the first one they announced was Caitlin Dever, who will be playing Abby. This is from IGN. She'll be joining Bella Ramsey and Pedro Pascal as Abby. And I don't know how to discuss this without getting into spoilers, but maybe just that she plays a character that a portion of the fan base was not too happy with.
Well, we can say, I think that, I don't think it's really a big secret that the character of Abby is controversial for multiple reasons. But we can just say, like, here's your spoiler warning, I suppose, for maybe the next like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Skip ahead. But so obviously in the events of The Last of Us 2, Abby does some things that a lot of people like disagree with. And like the problem with situations like this is where they'll have legitimate criticism mixed in with illegitimate criticism. And they think that the legitimacy of the certain criticisms validates the illegitimate ones. Like I've seen people who say like the pacing of The Last of Us 2 is really off. And I would agree with that. Like I think it's very like a very jarring story that bounces back and forth to play through the first time. I really felt like every time that I was getting into like one character or group of characters or part of a story, it would skip to a different part because you're sort of simultaneously but not simultaneously playing two different stories at the same time in the second game. And a lot of people didn't like playing as Abby. And I think some of that stems from like the actions in the game, but also the fact that she's not like your typical female protagonist in a game. And but yeah, a lot of it obviously comes from like the hate, I would say.
Yeah, and again, just want to reiterate spoilers.
Yeah.
But she in the game, she kills off Joel.
In the first hour or so, yeah.
A lot of people, you know, didn't like that because they wanted another story of Joel and Ellie together.
Yeah.
And she took that away from them as the audience. And so they hated her character. Mm-hmm. And then the game goes on and in their eyes has the audacity to try to make you like Abby.
The audacity to play as her and see her perspective. Yeah.
And people didn't like that either.
Yeah.
You know? So I think there was a lot of people had preconceptions of what the game was going to be. And when it wasn't that, they got angry and then just not everyone. Some do have legitimate complaints, like you were saying.
Yeah,
for sure. But a lot of people like became like the crazy hardcore, you know, hate The Last of Us entirely and just horrible on the internet, you know, just being as bad as you can be on the internet.
Yeah. The worst,
the voice actress and stuff. And she has nothing to do with this other than playing the role.
She made the character. She wrote the story. She modeled all the designs. She did all the animation. Yeah. It's her fault, which is, I mean, that's just no person who is in their right mind and in a healthy place in their life acts like that. Like that's a very small section of humanity that would, you know, go so far as to do something like that. So,
yeah.
But it did happen. Right. And, like I say, right. There's the legitimate criticisms that they will pair on one hand with the illegitimate criticisms and just like blatant, you know, misogyny and sexism and stuff, and trying to pick apart the character in ways that it's not relevant, not even true, and not relevant to the conversation anyway.
Yeah, so I think Caitlin Dever has... Now, maybe it'll be different with the TV audience, I don't know, but I'm sure a lot of those video game fans, you know, quote unquote fans, are going to use this as an opportunity to rise back up, make a bunch of YouTube videos complaining about the show, you know, and they're going to start their whole campaign again, and they might even attack Caitlyn Dever now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure they prepared her for this, and she signed on anyway. I think she was up for the running to be Ellie in season one. Okay. She might have aged out of it by the time they actually got to like actually making the show.
Right.
And I'm not sure. I remember just reading that she might have been a little too old at the time that they actually got rolling.
I feel kind of bad because it might be at the expense of like the creators and actors and stuff, like you say about them maybe catching some flack again and it, like things rising back up about the vitriol online around the character and stuff. But I get a real sense of Schadenfreude from people being so mad on the internet about stuff that does not matter at all. And they're just like so incorrect in their hatred, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. It just makes me so happy to see people so irrationally angry about stupid stuff. I don't know. It's especially if it's something that I tend to like. Like I don't even have to be a fan of it. I wouldn't say I'm the biggest fan of The Last of Us, but I love how much it like angers people. Just like the character Abby exists and that there's absolutely nothing that they can do that changes the story of The Last of Us Part Two.
They should put their passions into something they love rather than into something they hate.
Yeah, it's crazy the amount of people that choose to surround themselves with negativity and then are surprised that they're miserable. Like,
or they're making a pretty penny making all their hateful YouTube videos.
Or engagement farming on Twitter now.
Yeah. I feel bad for those people because I love The Last of Us. I loved the second game. You know, I love that the decisions they made. And I actually feel bad for these people who absolutely hate it because like they're missing out on something that I see so much, you know, greatness in. So
I think there is the point to consider, though, that they probably even if they were given the chance, they probably wouldn't see that. They wouldn't have that appreciation for it anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's kind of a lost cause, but I know what you mean. But you can't, not everybody has to like everything either.
Oh yeah.
And,
for sure.
At first I didn't, as Kayla and I were playing through The Last of Us Part Two, I didn't really like it as we were playing through it. And I think that's just because it made me upset. It made me uncomfortable. It made me question, you know, different characters and things. And I was like, you know, we were legitimately sad when, you know, Abby does what she does. And I have to say, like, I really did a complete 180 through that game and completely came around and really ended up liking Abby a lot more than Ellie by the end of it.
Yeah. And, God, I was going to say something. I can't remember. No, it's gone.
Gone. It'll come back when we stop recording.
Yeah. But anyway, well, we'll move on. If you were wondering who Caitlyn Dever is, she was in Justified, Last Man Standing, and she also had major roles in Dope Sick and Booksmart. And this past summer's No One Will Save You. All right, a final story for the week. Ubisoft and MiHoYo among publishers signing up for NVIDIA's AI-generated video character tool. This is from IGN. Ubisoft and MiHoYo, the developers behind Assassin's Creed and Genshin Impact, respectively, are among the first studios to sign up for NVIDIA's Avatar Cloud Engine, a new AI-driven tech platform said to create more lifelike video game characters. The technology works by passing players' voices through a speech recognition model to create text, according to NVIDIA, which is then added to a large language model. And the LLM's response is moved through text-to-speech and animation models to create the final product, in-game characters that can speak dynamically with players. In a video demonstration of the technology shown at CES, NVIDIA showcased dialogue between two NPCs who unsettlingly mused on the possibility of being AI-generated constructs before the characters began interacting directly with the human demonstrator's speech. The demo was created by NVIDIA in collaboration with Convai, a company working on conversational AI. So basically, they had these NPCs whose voices and responses were completely generated by AI and could react to your input. Now, this to me feels like the thing that a lot of actors were worried about.
Mm-hmm.
AI taking their jobs.
It's a very like delicate conversation, I think, because yeah, like you say, like there's the inherent agreement that these actors sign when they do a project that their voice is allowed to be used for this product and that people are allowed to sell this product and that they are inherently part of, right? So there's that mm-hmm. consent there. Whereas if people are using AI to then train it on a model of some other person's speech and then have that person say whatever they want it to say, the actors can't consent to that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that now puts their whole like identity at risk because they could be, you know, made to say anything. And it's sort of like the deepfake concerns that people were having before, where it's like, we're going to have some deepfake video of the president going out and saying America's declaring war on like, yeah. you know, Spain. And then people in Spain will be like, wait, what the fuck? And then, you know, they'll have to pretty quickly debunk whether it was like AI or not, you know?
Yeah.
And so that just is cause for a stir. And that's an extreme example. But the point that I'm making, obviously, is that like, these characters can now be made to say things that the actor themselves does not agree with. And you know, obviously also the part of the matter being that like acting is an art form and robots can't, you know, perform in the same way that a human person can.
And I think, there was another issue that in that Prince of Persia game that just came out. I believe it was that game. I could be mistaken. But there was a character that a lot of people thought the voice sounded like AI. And when they put the dialogue into a AI speech generator, it sounded like almost identical to the same performance.
Mm.
And this person is not credited in the credits, this character.
Oh,
so is it AI then?
Yeah, well, we don't have confirmation, but that's what people think it is.
That's what it would lead you to believe, that this person doesn't have a credited voice actor. Yet.
And that's Ubisoft again, right?
Prince of Persia is Ubisoft, yep.
Now, I have to give credit to Ubisoft for trying new technologies, but they seem to always jump into the controversial ones. Remember how quickly they jumped into NFTs and then just had it explode in their face?
I don't know if they necessarily jump into the controversial ones or they jump into the newest thing, and the newest thing is often controversial.
Yeah, but there's new technologies no one's going to care about. Like if they jumped into VR, no one's getting angry.
That's iterative though, because VR has always been like sort of a thing that you could, you know, in a very very rudimentary way do in the 80s and 90s at like an arcade. You know, there were like little goofy AR game or VR games that you could play, like little shooters and stuff. Were they very good? No. You know, did they work very well? I don't know, but probably not. But those were iterative, whereas like an NFT and like this AI thing is a new, they're a new frontier. You know what I mean? Like it's mm-hmm. it's a different thing. It's not like it would be like the equivalent of if like the very first cryptocurrency comes out. I mean, like Ubisoft would jump into that, but they wouldn't jump into like the fourth one necessarily, right? Like they just seem to always be right in the forefront. And so they're going to, of course, they're going to get hit by the controversial questions because they're doing state of the art things.
Yeah. I don't know. It just feels like they keep putting their foot in their mouths.
Does it affect sales though? Is a good question though. Like would people be like, I'm not playing Ghost Recon Breakpoint cause you guys added NFTs, or I don't know if they did or they didn't or how that went, but I remember they were going to. And like, I would assume it's not that big of a deal anymore. Like it's not, you know, rampant in the game or anything, but
I don't think they're doing well in general though.
NFTs?
And no, Ubisoft. And maybe that's why they're looking for,
something dramatic and game changing.
Some way to get ahead a bit, you know, but maybe they should just let things cool down a little bit before jumping right in.
Well, there's an argument there, sure. But at the same time, like, I think that they do let things cool down in a way that they don't let it cool down before touching it, but they go in, they check it. And if it doesn't do well, like NFTs, it's like, we're not hearing about NFTs in Assassin's Creed Mirage.
No,
you know, message received, yeah. You know, okay, people don't want these. Cool. Moving on. They're not being like, nope, we're an NFT company. And that's where we're going to like live. So, I mean, I don't know, credit to them for trying it, you know, whatever. You don't like your NFT, you know, gun skin, fair enough. I'm not going to do that again. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, like I said, I do give them credit for trying new technologies, but I just think it's humorous that they are jumping into these crazy ones like this.
Well, because they really pioneered, at least in my mind, parkouring in games. And they really, yeah, free running system, and they pioneered... what I would actually say is the modern open world game, really, where like you have like your outposts and your like side objectives and your main objectives. And like that really started with Far Cry 3. And a lot of other open world games have come around to that. And I understand that Far Cry 2 is similar to Far Cry 3 and blah, blah, blah. I don't have like an exact point in time in which they did this, but I would say that they were one of the pioneers, or at least like a major pioneer in my mind, of the games that I've played. And they've influenced open world games a lot. But lately, they're, you know, the target of criticism in, hey, Ubisoft just iterates on what they did last. And there's always outposts. You know, there's always towers to climb to reveal the map. It doesn't matter what game it is. You know, that's what happens. And that's, you know, that holds true even in an extent in Avatar, where you go and you take out the human outpost to remove the pollution on the map. And like the map does get revealed, though it's not revealing the map necessarily, but it removes the pollution on the map to make that section of Pandora useful, because you need the organic materials and such in there. So they sort of pioneered some stuff, came up with a formula, stuck with it, and now they're kind of, you know, they're stuck in that rut. So they need a jolt. And if they wait until something cools down, like how long are you going to wait till someone makes a game with it? Because games now take 5-6 years to make. Now they're 5-6 years late, and then they'll get criticized for copying something 5-6 years late.
Maybe they shouldn't announce it.
I disagree with that too. I think announcing it's the thing. If they silently did NFTs, you know, some news agencies might pick up on it, or like it might go completely under the radar, though, and then they wouldn't pick up on it. They wouldn't know that NFTs are not what people want necessarily. And then you would have NFTs in Assassin's Creed Mirage and stuff, and then they would take them longer to spin down. I think get the controversy out of the way, because it's not like they're beating anyone up. You know what I mean? It's like they're like, we have NFTs, guys. And everyone's like, that's dumb. They go, all right. And they walk away. Fair enough. You know, hands up, and they walk away.
It looks like their NFT site is still up. Quartz.ubisoft.com.
There might still be some semblance of it, but we're not seeing it in games that they're making, and we're not hearing about it all the time. The only game
listed is Ghost Recon Breakpoint.
Yeah, exactly. So they've backed down from what we, you know, everyone's like, oh my god, their NFTs are going to be in everything, and it's like, no, well, like that didn't happen.
Ubisoft Quartz is a new experience available to our players, built upon our vision of creating ever greater connection between you and the game worlds you love. The Ubisoft Quartz platform is the place where you'll be able to acquire digits, the first Ubisoft NFTs, playable in a HD game and relying on an energy-efficient technology. Digits will be playable on the Ubisoft Connect PC version of Tom Clancy's Ghost Recon Breakpoint.
Available now.
So digits are just in-game cosmetics. Collectibles and in-game cosmetics, it says.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I get it to an extent. Like some people had said, like it would be a way for them to, like, if you unlocked a really cool gun in a game and it would be unique to you in some way, like it was a procedurally generated skin, you really liked it, that's your unique gun, and then you could bring that into the next Ubisoft game, like the next like Ghost Recon, say, via your NFT. Like, sure, but, that's cool, but like, whatever. Like,
but the question is, why do you need NFTs to do that? There's nothing stopping you from doing that right now without NFTs.
Right, it's just a decentralized way of doing it.
But why does Ubisoft need to do that? They don't.
But that's why they're not doing it anymore.
It's a marketing thing.
Well, they're trying it out. Of course, it's a marketing thing. Everything, like to be fair, is a marketing thing in that way. I think it's good that they're trying stuff, because they got to get out of the rut that they're in, and I think that's the only way to get out. Like, there might be another way out, but the only way off the top of my head is They gotta take some risks and just try some stuff. But they do have to know when to back down, and it seems like they do know when to back down to an extent.
I really want to know how much Avatar sold.
I wouldn't be surprised if it's not bad. I wouldn't be surprised if it's not bad, though, because of the TV and movie fans, because they're not going to be the ones that are talking on game forums and Reddits and all that stuff. They're just going to be like, I like Avatar. I guess I'll buy Avatar for my Xbox.
Apparently, user scores are higher than any recent Far Cry or Assassin's Creed.
Avatar is unironically a really, really good game. Like, if you just want a game where, when you run around in a forest and you just, like, fight robots and stuff, like, Avatar is really good.
I love that you're playing it, Matt. It's so
I love it, too. I love that it just ate my words immediately. Like, it's a really good game.
All right, that's it for this week's news. Going to move on to what we're playing. Tim, what have you been playing this week?
Just a lot of Monster Hunter. Honestly, it's probably going to be that way for a while. I'm in the Monster Hunter sphere, getting back into the old habits of spending way too many hours just grinding for rare drops. But the core gameplay loop is there, and it's fun, and that's why people like it. And I'm really excited for this summer when when Capcom reveals more information about Monster Hunter Wilds. I really hope they add more like event stuff too for Monster Hunter World in lead up to Wilds. I really hope that they do some sort of like cross promo type thing, because they're making the big like marketing push for people to be like going back to World, and they're doing their like community live streams again and stuff. Like, they really seem to want people to be back in it. So it's funny that it just happened to line up with like me wanting to be playing Monster Hunter again, and then at the Game Awards it was announced. And so,
right,
you know, the Steam charts for Monster Hunter World, you know, peaked 150,000 concurrent players last week, I think. Something like that, 158,000 it peaked at, which is, it hasn't done that since like Iceborne came out, which is the expansion for it.
That's pretty impressive, actually, to be honest.
I can't imagine there's too many games that like get a player resurgence like that. Like, this is what, 6 years after World came out? No, that's not quite right. Five years. Well, almost six, because it was January of 2018, I think. Man, it does not feel like that long ago. But yeah, honestly, that's largely been it. And then still doing the Monster Hunter Now on my phone as well. When I take the dog for a walk, I'm still hunting the monsters in real life too. That game takes a way longer to like grind, though. Like, you need way more of like the same stuff in that game to like make any advancement, and then it's like a very minor upgrade to your weapon and stuff. But I'm not really like focusing, right? It's just sort of like an idle thing that I do while I'm, you know, out for a walk or walking the dog or out for groceries. I might pull out my phone and just see if there's any collectible items around, that kind of thing.
Are you afraid of burning out before this new game comes out?
Nah, because like, well, I will say, yeah, burning out on Worlds, like, it'll probably happen, yeah. But it's not like I'll be like, oh, I'm burnt out on Monster Hunter when Wilds comes out, you know? Like, I'm not going to not play Wilds when it releases because, oh, I played a lot of World, I'm good. Like, it's right. A new game, you know? It's a different experience.
I would just like, I have like the, obviously like the backlog project, and like one of the things that I learned that I can't and like haven't done since is I just like really should not play the same series for a long time, because it's just like, I don't know, like, yeah, like, yes, it is a new game and like a new perspective from, especially if the game is like, you know, one's really old, one's newer, but it's just, to me, it's just like too long in that world. And so like, to me, I would get afraid of burning out on Monster Hunter in general, and then being like, well, this new game came out, I played it for, you know, 6 hours or something, and I'm out. Like, I've experienced it, I've done the gameplay loop once, I'm out of here.
If it was, like, if I knew that it was going to be really similar, like, if it was a Far Cry game, where I know that I'm just going to be going to outposts and clearing them out and climbing towers to unlock the map, and it's all very, like, similar gameplay like that, then I could maybe see that. Like, I'm not going to play all of Far Cry 3 and then go right to Far Cry 4 and then right to Far Cry 5 and, you know, and then Primal and all this stuff, right? Like, from what we're seeing about Wilds, it seems like it's going to be like the likelihood is that it's going to be a big open world game with a big feature on like weather systems and stuff like that, which is, again, it's very new stuff for the Monster Hunter series. They really, it seems like the core games, like not the spinoffs, like Generations and then like Rise and stuff like that. But the main series games, what could like World would be considered Monster Hunter 5 and then Wilds is going to be considered Monster Hunter 6. They always seem to like make pretty big strides in gameplay mechanics and things and advancement for the IP. So I'm fairly confident that even if I'm totally sick of World when Wilds comes out, I'm still going to want to play Wilds.
How long do you think you have on the mobile experience? Like, do you think you're going to be playing that consistently, like all throughout the both games, or do you see yourself even falling off of that? Because that's obviously much different than the console stuff.
I can see it going either way. Like, I play it so infrequently, like between doing other stuff in my life, that like I don't mind just popping it up, like popping up the app and just being like, oh, you know, what monsters are around me, or what items can I collect for materials and stuff. But at the same time, right, like it's such a micro, you know, advancement every time that I play it, that I can see myself just being like, man, why am I playing this? Like, I'm not making any advancement at all. I don't know anybody else who plays it, so I can't even do like the multiplayer part of it, which is kind of another big feature of it. I may as well just, you know, give it up until I either add a bunch of brand new content, or like, you know, my situation changes where I can play it differently.
Right, right. Yeah, like you have like a, I don't know, a community or something to play with.
Yeah, precisely. But yeah, that's I mean, that's largely been my week. I'm sure it's going to be my week for a while for these check-ins on the podcast, just because these are games that, you know, they take a good amount of time to play, and I'm in them for more than just like the story, right? I'm these are, forget MMOs, like these are the games that I'm into for the end game grind and like the completionism and stuff. So
I do have an update. This is the UK sales charts for the week ending December 9th, 2023. Oh, okay. Avatar Frontiers of Pandora was number 5. So it broke the top 10 and went to number 5. So that's pretty decent. Now, the ones in front of it are, you know, big heavy hitters. EA Sports, FC 24, Super Mario Bros. Wonder, Hogwarts Legacy, and Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3. You know, so it was unlikely to beat those ones, I guess. So where it got, it's pretty good.
Surprised to hear Hogwarts Legacy is still selling so well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, 22 million in 2023. That's crazy.
Yeah.
If you're interested in the rest of the list here, number 6, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Now that all the content's finally out for it.
I bought it in December.
Really?
Yeah. Oh,
hell yeah. Let's do some Mario Kart.
Because we were having I was having a Christmas party, and we bought it to actually play some.
Nice.
Nintendo's the only one who has couch co-op games anymore.
Kind of true. Except for like some indie games on Steam, but yeah.
Yeah. Number 7 was Marvel's Spider-Man 2. Number 8, Nintendo Switch Sports.
Really?
Damn, I can't help but feel I've like barely a played lot of these game. Are like people having parties and buying.
Yeah, in Christmas or Christmas parties. Yeah.
Yeah. Number 9, Minecraft for Switch. And number 10. Now, this one really shocked me. Lego Star Wars, The Skywalker Saga.
What the hell?
Yeah.
That is strange.
Maybe people bought it for Christmas gifts.
Probably for their kids. Yeah.
Anyway, that's the UK. So. All right, Matt, what are you playing?
Me? What? I actually beat a couple of things this week. I beat The Order 1886.
Oh, nice.
That game sucked.
Oh, what? I really liked that game.
I really liked it, too.
I know. It was, the mechanics were very clunky, and I took issue with the... how the chapters were handled. So I had this one chapter where then I do like a pretty long gameplay stint, and then I just looked up what chapter I was on. I think it was like 8 chapters back. I don't remember how many chapters there were total, but I was eight chapters back from the end, and I was like, oh my god, like this game's actually kind of long. I don't know why people say it isn't. It isn't long. And then I watched one cutscene, and I mean, this is from memory, but I watched one cutscene. I went down an elevator. My gameplay was I walked forward and pressed the action button on something. Another cutscene played. The chapter ended. Another chapter begins. I go up the elevator in the cutscene. Another cutscene plays, and then that chapter ends. So I just like ripped through 2-3 chapters just in cutscenes and very minimal gameplay. And I was like, nah, okay. Like, that's a little bit. Anyway, that last level was fucked. The last level was like really fucking hard. Specifically, like, I think it's like the second last room where everyone's trying to kill you. Like, the last boss was nothing. Beat him the first try. That wasn't the problem. It was the, I don't know if you guys remember it, but you're in like the tunnels. The tunnels are like the sewers, of course. And you're fighting and like 100 guys come running out of a room and they give you like an arsenal to take. But obviously you can't take more than a couple of weapons, like a sidearm, a main weapon. And then I think like a big weapon or whatever it is, a throne item or something. And like, holy crap. So like, I don't know, that game I would say did not age well. The story is really cool. The graphics are really nice for the age and they still hold up. I'm giving it a solid 4 out of 10. Solid 4 out of 10.
Dang. That's like half of what I would give it.
It just didn't suck me in. Like, there was a part of the writing. I think I may have talked about this on the show before, but there's a part of the writing where like you play as Galahad and there's another person on your team named Issy, and she gets injured in a hospital. And so you like have to like rush her to like a bed and then give her like that concoction that everyone drinks. Cause you guys are like, I don't know, immortal or fast healers or whatever. And so you like drink this concoction and then she's so hurt that it's not like an instant get up. It's like she has to lay down for like a while. So you go as the player and you do some other things. You do like a boss fight and, you know, whatever. And then you go and you get her. And then this is like kind of far into the game. And then she just like suddenly drops that you should be asking her father for her hand in marriage and like that you and her deserve better. And I was like, I didn't pick up any sort of romance between us in this game. And all of a sudden I'm being asked to be like, yo man, like, you know, or we should be getting married though. Right. It's like, I did not.
Well, I seem to recall if you like pay attention to the conversations and stuff that they have, they used to be a thing and then they broke it off.
I definitely missed that. It's just that you missed some context. I definitely missed that. Yeah. But like that part of the writing kind of threw me off. And then, yeah, I don't know. So like, I think the game was dated, but I've heard from you two and I've heard from somebody else that the game was good. And then Aaron, actually, he agrees with me. He thinks the game's not that good. So whatever. Well,
can I clarify a bit? The game is clearly not as good as a game should have been from that time. However, I think it was a good first game and I'm sad that they just abandoned it.
I'd agree with that. I think the world building and stuff was good and whatever. And I think that if I had played it at launch, it would be higher than a 4 out of 10.
It's worthy of a franchise to me. And I'm sad that they just kind of gave up.
I don't know about that much because it's like, it's just another, like, you know, the story of like the Knights of the Round Table, just in a different like, yeah, context. It was cool. It's very cool. Yeah. But it's like, it's not super brand new. It's like a modern take on a classic story. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Which is very, I don't know. It's not.
But that's all stories.
Not.
We'd have no games if everything had to be completely new.
There's plenty of stuff that's brand new. Like there was no such thing as Fallout before Fallout came out. Like there was post-apocalyptic genre
stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm talking about that's not the same story. That's the same genre. I'm talking about things like how the movie that really bad 90s. Romeo and Juliet movie was made where they had like the guns and stuff instead of swords.
Oh.
I forgot about that until you just mentioned it. Holy crap. Isn't Leo in that?
Leonardo DiCaprio. Yeah. He's Romeo, I think.
Oh my God. But no, other than that, I started and finished kind of on a whim and in two nights, Star Wars, the Force Unleashed.
You finished it.
Yeah, started and finished it, done. That game's okay. Playing a bunch of okay games.
It was good for a Star Wars game at the time.
Yeah, so that's why I say that is because games like Batman Arkham Asylum have revolutionized combat in games like that. And so that's the type of combat I'm used to now. Shadow of War, all those type of games. And there's a bunch of others, many more examples. Assassin's Creed, even to an extent. This is just a really old combat game. So it has old combat mechanics where, like, the one of the game's, like few tricks is to knock you over and stun lock you, and you get stun locked frequently, or you get put into rooms where it's like, get, you know, get out of there, and the only prompt to tell you to do something on a door or whatever is just like a blue kind of aura over it. But sometimes you're in a room where it's just absolute chaos, and if you stop moving for a second, a rocket's going to hit you. So you have to just keep moving, and if you kill things, things will keep respawning. And so you don't know whether to force push the thing, you don't know whether to like stop, charge, and force push it. Can you just like do a quick force push? Can you, do you have to electrify it? Do you have to like force grab and move components? If that's the case, you need to do something to buy yourself time. And it's just, it's really janky like that. Like there's been many times where I would be like in an animation and I would be stuck in the animation, which still happens today. But then I would get physically moved from my location due to like an explosion or something, physically moved like over a considerable amount. And then something, because now I've been moved over, something else is there, and then it kills me while I'm still animating like I was in the original position. It's just an old combat game is basically the problem. I give that one about a 6 out of 10. But that's two games off the old backlog, and I'm actually starting to run out of old games, although the oldest of which is from 1997. So that's going to be a treat. Thankfully, it's a strategy game, so it shouldn't be too bad.
How about that Juno Eclipse, though, Matt? Yeah? Yeah?
I forget who Juno Eclipse is.
The love interest, the Imperial like pilot.
Oh, sure. I mean, I guess it's a typical Xbox like 360 era love interest type thing. Yeah. man, there was something hilarious actually. I don't know if I just don't know Star Wars too well, but I kind of found the story to be really bizarre. I was not aware fully that I was becoming, I mean, this is spoiler, I guess. Do you care, Tim, about this?
About what?
About Force Unleashed? Like, do you care about spoilers?
No.
Okay. I thought I was supposed to be just evil the whole time. And so, like, while I'm still evil, like, dark side, I text Ryan. I'm like, why are these stormtroopers attacking me? And then you're like, oh, you know, you're kind of off the books or whatever. So you're not known or whatever. And I'm like, okay, that doesn't make sense with the cutscene. And like, with a bit more context, like, that doesn't make sense. Like, okay. Then there's like a point in which it's like, hey, we're going to do like a coup. So you go and like start a rebellion, which will prove to us who's like not that loyal to the Empire. And then we'll like kill them together. But then you, of course, like become, you know, enamored with going against the dark side. And but the weird thing is that at the end of the game, you have like a light side and a dark side choice, but it's not really that. It's a good and a bad ending, but you are always light side. It's really bizarre. So like right at the end, like basically all your friends, all these like these would be rebels are being attacked by the Emperor. And one in particular is like going to be killed. And so they're like, help him. So you have the choice to either help your friend or Darth Vader has been beat to crap by you, then beat to crap by the Emperor and thrown down this like sort of chasm on the side of the ship. Or you could go down and kill Darth Vader. I went down there and killed Darth Vader. Like, I was like, I don't care about this old Jedi guy that I tried to kill and that he didn't die. And then he was like a drunk half the damn game. Like, okay. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm still supposed to be evil. Like, what are you talking about? And then so I assume I've chosen the evil dark side ending. No. Instead, it says, oh, you chose revenge, which is bad. And you were also like on the light side, more or less. So now you're like a slave to the Emperor, where you get rebuilt as like a partial machine because he absolutely beats the shit out of you in a cutscene. So you get rebuilt as a partial machine like Darth Vader. And he says, you will serve me until another apprentice comes along and then you'll be discarded just like Vader. And it's like, this isn't a, like a dark side ending. This is just a bad ending to me. And I did talk to a buddy about it who likes The Force Unleashed. And he said, yeah, like he agreed with me. He's like, it's a pretty fucking weird ending. I don't know if you remember any of that, Ryan, but like,
I remember holy crap. You trying to like kill Vader and he stops you or something.
You beat Vader up. And I mean, I can't remember exactly like scene to scene at this point, but it's like you face Vader in a boss battle. And then basically like he's all beat to crap and like, you know, he, you know, half of his like armor's off or whatever. He's like not, you know, he's not doing well or whatever. He's all beat up. And so like, you walk in and like basically the emperor basically discards him off the side of like one of like the walkways on a ship, not that deep though on the side, but like 10 or 15 feet down. And then he starts shocking your friend. And then you have that choice, walk down the walkway and help your friend or go down and kill Vader.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I did that because I was like, my guy is evil. He is dark side. He's using, you know, electrical thing. He's like killing Wookiees. He's going nuts. He's an evil guy. Like, this is the Force Unleashed. I'm evil. Let's go. And it's like, no, you're good, but you just made a bad choice. It's like, this is lame. That's lame.
Yeah, it kind of takes a lot of that like player agency away. Not that that was like a huge theme of games back in the day, but like, you want your choices to matter. And mm-hmm. that didn't matter at all. Yeah.
Like a lot of places have trouble making you actually be a bad person.
Because even something like Baldur's Gate 3, like where you are given a lot of evil options, they even still really make you feel bad about making the evil option a lot of the time.
Yeah, like they'll hide like gameplay and stuff, right? Sometimes where they'll be like, well, then you can't do this whole quest line. And it's like, well, do I get a different quest line? Like, nah. All right.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. Like a lot of the time you aren't given as many options or like you say, right? If you're like, oh yeah, I want to kill these characters in the beginning of the game because it's what like an evil character would do. It's like, okay, well, you don't get any of the best vendors and quest lines in the third act then. And it's like, well, I made a bad choice then.
Like, yeah. It's a bad choice, not an evil choice.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Do you guys care about Battlefront 2 spoilers?
I think I've played
Battlefront 2 spoilers.
The new one, the EA one.
Oh, definitely not.
2014 or whatever it was.
Yeah, because they added the story mode, and like the story, like you play as a member of like an elite squad of stormtroopers, right? And spoilers, they turn out they become good at the end. And I feel like they just have trouble committing to a story being about bad people doing bad things. You know, it's like they always have to spin it into, oh, they're a good person now.
Yeah, so anyways, The Last of Us Part 1, where Joel is a good person.
oh, God.
See, they did it. They made a story about a horrible person. Matt, anything else?
No, but I did... I am planning on playing... I'm obviously doing my PSP stuff, but I'm just doing that on the side. I'm planning on playing a modern game soon, because I'm starting to get kind of bogged down in, like... the 2013s or something, or like the 2010s even, or even earlier than that. Actually, I think Force Unleashed might be 2008. But I did install Spec Ops: The Line. I was told that that's critically acclaimed.
That is critically acclaimed.
So, I've been meaning to play that for a really long time. Maybe I should like do that in my own time, or you tell me whenever you're playing it, and then I'll see if I can have time to play it too. We can like play through it at the same time or something.
Yeah, like I have it installed, so I'll like text you when I start it, and like it's apparently it's really good, and it was like only like a couple of bucks like months and months ago on the Xbox store, so I like picked it up, and
I've had it on Steam for a long time.
Did not know it was on PC, actually, but maybe I would have picked it up there, but
maybe it's even on sale. Never know.
Just another $2. Just another toonie.
Yeah.
Another toonie.
Yeah. Just another toonie, bro.
It's a quick toonie.
Do just toonies exist in the digital world?
We're gonna make the toonie NFT, bro.
Oh my god.
The two neef tea.
All right.
I don't mind that.
As for me, I finally finished Spider-Man 2.
Okay.
Took me 35 hours or something like that.
Game of the year, right?
No.
Okay.
Good game, but not game of the year.
You seem kind of dismissive of it.
You hear that, Spider-Man fans? You hear that? No, I'm sure it's great.
The big problem people had was it was too much of the same. Because we already had Spider-Man, and then Spider-Man Miles Morales, you know, and then Spider-Man 2 comes out, and it's just the same game again. And so I think people are just kind of tired of the formula that they established. Even though it's a good one, it's still a good game. I know that like Damon from IGN said that he didn't really play the other Spider-Mans, and he was like having a really great time playing this one for the first time. So
Spider-Man, right?
Spider-Mans.
Spider-Mai, actually.
No, it's not that for sure. I know what it isn't, and that's what it's not.
So I beat that, and then I started Alan Wake 2.
Oh.
Which just oozes oozes with style. Yeah. I love it. It's really it's been really good so far. And
have you seen any of the clips? I mean, I guess you watched the Game Awards, but have you seen anything of all the like Champion of Light, Herald of Darkness stuff?
Not too much yet.
The song?
Yeah. I just saw the song and Sam Lake dancing and Alan Wake dancing.
Well, the song is in the game, but that's what I'll say.
The band has shown up in the game.
Yeah.
I've seen them in the game. So,
which is funny because they're an actual band in real life under a different name, I think.
Oh, they're not the old gods of Asgard?
No, that's the made up name, I think, in the game. I don't know. I'm not a huge Alan Wake fan, but I'm pretty sure that that's like their fake band in that Alan Wake Control universe, the Remedyverse.
I don't want to give too much away, but there is a talk show in the game, and the set is gorgeous. that's all I wanted to say.
Is it 70s style?
It's not like it takes place in the 70s. At least I don't think so. But it is like styled after it. There's like a nice, you know, piece of wood behind him, and it has like his name in gold, and it's a really nice looking set.
It's very brown.
Yeah,
Ryan's favorite color.
Yep. Brown, greens,
orange.
Yep. Oh yeah. That's pretty much what I've been doing this week.
We all did Remnant as well. Remnant 2.
Remnant, which we I'd be down to play this weekend if you guys are.
We can play it after. We don't have to play live.
Don't have to answer live. Yeah, no.
Yeah.
You can say no too. That's a perfectly acceptable.
I can't say no. Nope. Not allowed.
Answer. But anyway, Tim, where can they find you? Playing Monster Hunter.
Always Monster Hunter every day of the week. 24/7. I wish, but no. twitch.tv/thesidetrack as per the huge. If you're a Monster Hunter fan, it's been the hoppin' place to be. If you're wanting to get back into Monster Hunter World Iceborne because of the hype or Wilds, or if you used to play it and you want to get back into it, or you're not really understanding all the hype and you want to see what it's all about. Just a bunch of people. Mostly me, who are really enthusiastic about Monster Hunter. So, twitch.tv/thesidetrack if that's your bag. And then, like I said, Ryan, obviously playing Remnant 2 on Wednesday nights, twitch.tv/day1patchmedia. Usually quite late at night, so I'm very tired when it happens, but it gets goofy. We'll say that much.
All right. I like that game a lot, though. You just kind of wander around, and I don't know. I like it.
I haven't been paying attention to any of the story at all, which I don't think really matters in a game like that, where they seem to have designed it to be like very replayable and stuff and random. It's almost like a roguelike in a way. But
yeah, it's like a roguelike, but you re-roll it. You don't like die and have to reset.
Roguelike over a much longer period of time per run.
Yeah. I like it a lot.
It's fun.
All right. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you guys next time.
Peace.